After years on the road, Timmy parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me. This is episode 94, and this is Jason Wisdom of Death Therapy. Thank you for checking out Talk To Me on iTunes, Google Play, Podcast Addict, however you get your podcast, and make sure you're leaving a nice five-star rating, a nice five-star review. And I've got an iTunes review to read to you guys this week, so let's go ahead and check that out. This is from kid.chris. It's a nice five-star review. Great guests and fantastic interviews. Nice title. Josh Toomey always delivers with his metal interview podcast. He has great guests from any up-and-coming bands to the mainstays that have kept metal alive. With a nice little goat horns metal emoji there. So thank you, kid.chris, for the kind words. And also, we do shout-outs for sharing, and that's shout-outs for sharing on Facebook and Twitter. So if you see this podcast show up in your Twitter or Facebook feed, make sure to hit that share button, hit that retweet button, and you will get a shout-out on an upcoming episode. And so here are the shout-outs for the Trevor Pierce and Scott Bowling episodes. We've got Adam Cox, Joel Baggett, James C. Harrison, Zach from Bleed TV, Jordan Willis, Kenneth Roy, or Kenneth Waugh, I don't know how you say that one, Eric Moore, our fine friends over at the Classic Metal Show, Rico Kohler, Jody Moran, and Scott Bowling and Danny Gilliatt. So make sure you guys are hitting that share button, hit that retweet button, and let all of your friends and family know that you are checking out the Talk To Me podcast. Also, we've got some Talk To Me stickers in, so if you want a Talk To Me sticker to slap on your guitar, slap on your car, slap on your forehead, I don't know, make sure to reach out to the Talk To Me podcast Facebook or my personal Facebook and send your address, and I will mail you a sticker for free. So yeah, if you want a free sticker, make sure to reach out and send an address to the facebook.com/talktometalk. Hit me up Twitter at talktometalk, or if you want to, just send it to talktometalk@gmail.com. Either way, I will get you a sticker. And also a huge shout out to metalnexus.net for running a great story on Trevor Pierce on the Trevor Pierce episode. Gotta say thanks to those guys over there, Fist and Loghain. Those guys have been great to the podcast. So make sure you guys are checking out metalnexus.net for all your metal news needs. Also, if you can tell, I'm running solo. Yes, Mike has stepped down from the podcast. That was a decision that he made. He just wasn't, quote unquote, feeling the podcast and doing the interviews, things like that, which I completely understand 100% and have no ill will towards Mike. So, we're going to definitely keep him in the fold. I think he's going to do some stuff for the website once the website gets together, maybe do some photos, do some concert reviews, and make sure you're still checking him out over on decibelgeek.com and checking out all the fine photos and stuff. And just a huge thank you to Mike for coming on board and coming on board for like those 10 or so episodes. You'll still hear Mike here and there occasionally. There's still a couple more interviews in the can that he was a part of. So Mike is gone, but not forgotten. And no ill will from me. And hopefully you guys have no ill wills towards Mike for not being on the podcast anymore. So let's get into some what I did this week. And, the last week I got to go and see Dope. I have not seen Dope since 2002, since, the famed $12 Riot tour. Talk about someone that can milk a six-week tour with a certain band. I've milked that so much. I've gotten so many interviews from Skin Lab. I got some interviews from Dope. Obviously did some time in Primer 55, things like that. So yeah, definitely crazy, man. And it was great to see those guys after, 16 years. Haven't seen them live since then. And, man, they put on one hell of a show. So if you get a chance to go see Dope and Combi Christ on this current tour, make sure you're checking it out, because Dope, amazing live show. They got some video screens going on. And the place they played, Trixie's, is not a very large venue, but they fit their entire stage show on the stage and put on one hell of a rock concert. So if you guys want to go and check out a good show, make sure you're checking out Dope on this current tour. It was good to see Virus. Got to chat with him for a minute. Did not get to see Etzel. Texted with him throughout the day, but he was not feeling well. So hopefully I'll get another phone interview with him coming up soon for you guys to check out. And speaking of checking out, let's check out the Talk To Me cover of the week, brought to you by PuckHockey.com. That's PUCKHCKY.com. Make sure to head over there because they just had a huge announcement. They have just did a deal with Snoop Dogg. So yes, you can head over to puckhockey.com and get yourself some Snoop Dogg jerseys. Get yourself some Snoop Dogg jerseys, Head PE, Doyle, 36 Crazy Fists, David Ellefson, Tom Hazard, so many great things over there. And make sure to shop until you drop. Use the promo code TALK, as in TALK TO ME, for 10% off your entire order. Yes, that's TALK, as in TALK TO ME, for 10% off your entire order. So the TALK TO ME cover of the week this week is going to be Atreyu doing You Give Love a Bad Name. I love Atreyu, and don't tell anybody, but I love some Bon Jovi. So put those two together, and you get one great cover song. So let's check it out. This is Atreyu doing You Give Love a Bad Name.
You are listening to Talk To Me on Uncontrolled Noise.
Shout through the heart, and you're to blame. Darling, you give love a bad name. Fuck you!
Matt Hasey from Stripium, and you're looking to Talk To Me.
All right, and now on to the guest of honor this week. It is Jason Wisdom of Death Therapy, formerly of Becoming the Archetype. This guy has done what every bass player wants to do, and he's basically gotten rid of the entire band. He's hired a drummer. He's had some tracks laid down behind him. He just plays bass. He sings. It's an amazing, amazing band. You guys need to check this out. You're going to hear a couple of songs on this, but make sure you're going to check out The Storm Before the Calm. It's out now on Solid State Records. He is on tour with Red until April 12th. So if you check your local listings and you see that Death Therapy is coming through town, make sure to go check it out, because like I said, he's doing what every single bass player has always dreamt to do, and that's to just go solo. Just me and the bass. Me and the bass, hire a drummer, put up some tracks, and let's do this. And so yeah, Jason Wisdom, Death Therapy, this is a nice long conversation I had with him a few weeks ago, and this was like gearing up for this tour, things like that. So let's check out some Death Therapy, and then let's get into my conversation with Jason Wisdom. Like some sort of weird super group.
Yeah.
But man, you know, it's just so basically what you've done, in my opinion, is the ultimate dream. You know, you're the only guy in the band. You know, you've hired the drummer, you've hired the keyboard guy or whatever, but I mean, you know, singer, bass player, no guitars. I think that's the formula for the future, man.
Yeah, that's the dream, right? There's a really funny was it Consequence of Sound video that I saw that was like the bass player's anonymous meeting. Did you see that one?
No, I haven't seen it.
Like
to check
unappreciated bass players meeting, and they're all sitting around, you know, like complaining about how their bands don't recognize them as being part of the band, or the singer doesn't want the input from the bass player, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, one of the guys is just like, I've got an idea. Let's start a band with just all basses. And of course everybody's like, no, you know? So it's like, nobody wants to hear that. So yeah, that's the dream, right? Like just start a band. But like, for me, it's not just sort of part of the dream, but it's also kind of look into what can I do that's going to be sustainable. You know, that's the big buzzword, I think, when you get to be in your 30s and want to play music or do anything, right? Like sustainability. How can I do this and keep doing it? And I know that I can't sustain a group of four or five guys anymore, you know, with families. I mean, the band I used to be in, Becoming the Archetype, at this point, all the dudes who would be involved in a Becoming the Archetype reunion are married and have two kids each. So we're talking about, you know,
right,
it's 15, 18 people or something involved in this that I have to get all on the same page. It's just not going to happen. So
the Death Therapy is kind of what we're talking about. And
yeah,
the one thing that I noticed, I was kind of going through YouTube watching some of the lyric videos today. I've been, you know, I got the link to the promo copy, and then I heard you and Trav talking about breaking down each song, things like that. So, I mean, you had kind of talked about it. I think you've been on his podcast a few times, but maybe a while back you were on there talking about this project, and I didn't know how serious it was. It kind of right. sounded like, you know, kind of sounded like a, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. But now watching the lyric videos, reading the comments, you know, comment wise, it's just like, you know, people, it's actually very positive. Like for YouTube, I was like scrolling through comments on YouTube, and for YouTube, you know, a lot of people were, digging what you're doing.
And yeah, I'm surprised by that too, actually. I mean, I think I told Travis at one point, I was like, I think I'll know I've made it when I start seeing a bunch of negative comments pop up on YouTube. It's almost like when I look and see that it's mostly all positive comments, I keep thinking, oh, so these are just all my buddies, you know,
right? Like,
the only people who know about this so far are my, you know, close circle of friends who are all afraid to say something bad because they think I'll see it. There's always those couple people that feel like they have to downvote things on YouTube, which I don't understand that personally. Like, I feel like if I don't like a video on YouTube, then I don't even have the interest to, you know what I mean? I don't even want to waste the energy to click thumbs down. I just move on.
Well, I think in the algorithm of YouTube, I think the downvote is not necessarily against your video. It actually just kind of, the algorithm picks up a downvote, so they go, okay, well, they don't like things like Death Therapy. So in the grand scheme of things, their recommended for use and stuff like that get affected that way. So it's not a huge, like, this song sucks. It's more like, I'm just not into this. That's how I do. That's how I have to look at it.
That makes more sense.
Yeah,
I'm just lazy. I don't click on things unless I like really like them.
Well, see, if I don't like it, I push the downvote as hard as I can. Like, I break my phone screen, like, argh! But
yeah.
But man,
you could say it's getting pretty serious.
Nice. Yeah, it's you know, like I said, man, it's what was one of the comments I had was, even when people were like, sounds like Marilyn Manson, but I like it. You know, it was, it's like, almost, is this a negative comment? But then, no, it's not. But, you know, it's,
well, I mean, I think there's a place in, like, at least people my age or around my age, I feel like for them to say, oh, it reminds me of Marilyn Manson, like, on the one hand to them, that feels kind of corny. And there's one particular song they're talking about, and it does. It's definitely heavily influenced by, like, late 90s Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, yeah.
That particular song. But, like, at the same time, I feel like the other side of the coin is they're kind of like, yeah, but, I mean, it's a guilty pleasure. Like, you know, I mean, we all know that song. We all know The Dope Show. We all know, you know, The Beautiful People. And even if we want to be like, man, Marilyn Manson's so corny and this or that, it's like it comes on and we're kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember this song. You know what I mean? If you're 30 or older, it takes you back to a place, at least for me, you know. And so what I've told people is when I wrote this record, I sort of tried to just sort of almost block out of my head any preconceived notions about what do I have to do here to be current, or what do I have to do here to be technical enough, or anything. It was just sort of, because I did that kind of stuff with music I've written in the past. It was like a very planned out thing. This was sort of just, I'm going to turn on record, see what happens, and see what comes out of me, sort of stream of consciousness. And turns out that when I do that, and I think this is probably the case for most people if they did it that way, when I just sort of let it pour out of me, it sounds like my junior and senior year in high school, right, which was in the late 90s. So that's going to sound like Rage Against the Machine with Marilyn Manson, with Rob Zombie, with, you know, that kind of stuff, because that's what I was listening to. So yeah, I don't take it as a slam when people say it sounds like that.
I think when people say it sounds like that, you're like, well, it's kind of supposed to sound like that. It's you know, it's kind of what I was going for. So maybe it's a, right. It's like, it, you know, like once again, it's kind of like an odd compliment. And at the same time, it's not like there's tons of bands out there doing stuff like that right now. This is the time for a band like Death Therapy to come out.
Yeah. I mean, you do some like techno drum sounding beats and some speaking vocals over a riff, and all of a sudden all the Marilyn Manson experts come out of the woodwork. And it's like, well, guys, that was 20 years ago. So, I mean, is it okay if I do something that's a little influenced by that? I mean, everybody sounds, Travis said this, tons of times, on his podcast, As the Story Grows, in case we haven't mentioned it, right? Travis said, you know, basically all the bands you like are just the ones who copy the bands that they like the best.
Absolutely.
You
know, like, right.
So I can remember being 20 years old and idealistic and thinking that I was going to make something new and this something nobody had ever heard before, and change the whole world and change the whole game. But now I'm a little older, a little wiser, and I'm kind of like, I just want to write music that I like. And, you know,
I think at the end of the day, that's what you have to do. You have to write music that you enjoy, because, you know, if it ends up flopping, at least you have a record that you enjoy, you know, and that's
exactly.
And at the same time, I think you have a lot of like-minded people that will listen to this and go, wow, this is really good. And the whole like Christian metal core, whatever scene becoming the archetype was in, it seems like you have a lot of fans coming over from that, like, oh man, Jason Wisdom's got a new band, let's check it out. Well, it's not like becoming the archetype, but man, this is really awesome. He was my favorite singer of that band, blah, blah, blah. Like, I saw those comments too. So, I mean, you've also kind of got a built-in fan base there too, or at least a built-in check it out fan base.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, put a lot of my life into that band and invested a lot of time and really hope that there's some equity there, that people will at least give this a shot. And I mean, you know, I'm hoping that some of them have grown up. I mean, even when Becoming the Archetype was new, our fan base was largely older than a lot of other bands that were new's fan base, if that makes any sense. Like, there's bands out there now that are really popular. I don't know who I would name, but like in the metal scene, you know, a band like Attila or something like that, their fan base is like, you know, probably 15 years old to 25 is like their demographic where they do the best.
Right.
Becoming the Archetype was always like a 25 to 40 was our, like, when we did best. Well, so now if 25 to 40 was in the early 2000s was who we were appealing to, well, those people are now 35 to 50. And so I'm hoping that some of them have, you know, come along with me for the ride, and they feel like, you know, they feel like, hey, this is somebody that I invested in the past, and I'm glad they're back. And because that's the way I look at it. I mean, anybody who's supported this record so far, that's, to me, that's just huge. Like, you know what I mean? The people who've gone out and bought the record, took a chance on a totally different thing that I've done, that means a ton to me. Because who am I? I'm a dude who lives in a little town in Auburn, Georgia. You know what I mean? So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you can't deny that accent. I'll tell you that much.
Well, where are you from?
You know what's funny is I'm from Nashville. I live in Louisville now, so it's not like I'm, you know,
Louisville,
Kentucky. Yeah. You know, but it's funny how much Southern people sound even, but even like Travis would probably think that I sound like you. You know.
Well, yeah, because I feel like I have a very mild accent compared to most of the people around, but I'm sure it comes through.
No, yeah, I mean, it's definitely mild, don't get me wrong. It's not, yeah, I've definitely know some people that are way, way, way Southerner. But I will say that I had a friend that moved from Nashville to New York, and when he would go to bars, he would start talking, and girls would flock to him because he said that they were so used to fast-talking New Yorkers that when that Southern drawl came out, it's like the ladies just came running.
Oh, that's nice, huh?
So if you ever, you know, get divorced and stuff, he...
All right. Well, my wife might listen to this, so we're going to just... Next question.
Next question. Are you still substitute teaching? Was that a thing?
Well, actually, right now I'm full-time teaching.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but full-time... I mean, all teaching is full-time. Anybody who's listening to this who's ever taught knows that. There's no such thing as part-time teaching. But yeah, full-time teaching at a middle school right now, and loving every minute of it. No, I can't. I mean, if you're listening to this and you have not considered buying a record, please do so I can quit my horrible job. Right? Now, this is not the kind of project that's ever probably going to get me to a full-time band touring status, but that's the dream. So in the meantime, I gotta make some money, pay the bills, be a responsible dad and husband. But I'm playing as many shows as I can. Actually, what was it? In a week, we're doing some more CD release shows, going up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and then Ohio for a couple dates, and coming back. Got some festivals lined up for the summer. So yeah, working full time, but trying my hardest to be on the road whenever we can. There's actually a tour that I can't tell you about right now, but if it were to come through, we would be gone. We'd be on tour for a solid month coming up. So maybe I won't have that job anymore. It depends on if they let me come back.
Right. You might leave with that job, but it might not be there when you get back.
Right.
I had done some touring late 90s, early 2000s. And so there's photos of me out there playing and stuff. And then I went on to work at a youth home, you know, what do you call it? Like a private childcare, government, state funded childcare, things like that. I mean, kids that basically, you know, born to drug infested parents or things like that, you know, basically foster care, you know, pretty rough upbringing kids, but, they would always tend to find old photos of me with, you know, in like a nu metal phase or something.
Right. Oh,
bring
yeah.
Those in.
I've got those students who like will make sure that they Google my name and will like find some picture of me with like fire shooting out of my mouth from an old music video or something, or like a severed head of mine, you know, something like that we used to do. And they don't know that I'm in a new band, because I just more or less I'm like, yeah, that's old band I was in, because right. I definitely don't want that attention right now.
From I don't know, man. School. You know, you could
bump my record sales.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah, there you go.
At least five kids that like. Let's you know that's a whole other tangent,
right.
And we're not necessarily talking about that. But who are these kids that are listening to this music anymore? Like rock and roll. Like I hang out with these middle schoolers, they all listen to hip hop. Like that's it. And it's not even really hip hop. It's just like mumble rap stuff.
Mumble rap.
But like
awful.
Like they don't, none of them, like there's maybe five kids in the whole student body that I would pinpoint as listen to rock music of any kind, let alone heavy music. Where do these kids live? Like, are there private schools where it's just kids that listen to Bring Me the Horizon and, because those people are selling lots of records,
right? I don't know where they're selling them too, right?
Yeah,
my daughter is 14. Well, she's about to be 14. She's freshman in high school. My son is about to be 12, but they do fifth grade through eighth grade in middle school here. So I've got middle school and high school, and I'll go to their school and I'll look around, and it's exactly what you're talking about. It's you know, where are the kids? Where are the kids that are would buy a Death Therapy record? It's even if you went to the mall and walked past Hot Topic, you're not, you know, they're not in there either. So they're hiding somewhere.
But yeah, I don't know where they're at. That's one of those weird things. And I mean, I guess it's just, maybe it's just that people have become more subtle about their diversity in musical tastes. I mean, you know, in the 90s, it was like there were the goth kids over here, and they like looked goth and they listened to goth, and like the music they listened to defined them. And then there were like the Pantera kids over here, and the, you know, the stoner kids over here, and the skateboard kids over here listening to Green Day and whatever else in the late 90s. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was very like cut, and you could tell who the kids were. But now, I mean, maybe it's a little more subtle. Like, you know, the kid over here who's listening to Lil Yachty is also a fan of, you know, like I said, Bring Me the Horizon or 21 Pilots or whatever. 'Cause it's all kind of got lumped together now.
But also think, if your teachers came in and saw the Pantera kid, the goth kid, the skater kid, the stoner kid, to them, they all look like, probably they all listen to the same thing, you know. But when you're young, you can kind of pinpoint that stuff. But now that we're in our 30s, you can kind of go like, what are these kids doing? Because I mean, my son, he's, you know, like about to be 12, and I'm always like trying to sneak music in for him. And he's finally getting into like a little bit of stuff, like 21 Pilots he's kind of into, which at least it's kind of rocking a little bit here and there. But sometimes he's like, Dad, can I download this to my iPod and I'll listen to it? And I'm like, ah, this is not music. You know, yeah. I just want to be like, this is not rap, and give him a Dr. Dre or Snoop Dogg album, you know?
Oh, totally. I introduced one of the kids at my school to Run the Jewels the other day.
Nice.
Who I think is a really good current, you know, rap hip hop group. And they were just, I mean, all I did was like play like one part of it. And they were like, what is this? This sucks. And I was like, you suck. Like, what do you mean this sucks? You know, and they're like, I'm going to listen to 21 Savage, Lil Yachty. And I'm like, oh, you guys, what is wrong with you? I feel so old now. But yeah, anyway, that's, like I said, that's a whole other tangent. We don't have to go. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know who they are, but they must be out there. People are, like I say, people are buying these records from bands like Attila and stuff. And they're mainly kids that are like you said, 15, 18, going to Warped Tour. And I don't know.
That's funny that you kind of brought up Attila, but you know, they're from, aren't Attila from Atlanta?
Yeah. They went to high school, or a couple of them went to high school with my little brother.
Nice.
So actually not just Atlanta. They're from like this little town where I'm from. So,
well, the singer was on another podcast one day, and it was Jamie Justice podcast, and he was talking about Stuck Mojo, and mm-hmm. and dude from Attila claimed that he'd never heard of them. I'm like, how have you never heard of Stuck Mojo when you're basically in a rap metal band out of Atlanta?
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But
I'm with you.
That's neither here nor there. You're not gonna slam Attila in here and get some clicks, some clickbait.
Yeah, man, that's all I'm.
That's
all
what
about
you do.
I'm not trying to slam Attila. I'm just trying to say, like, I know that their demographic, because I used to work for a nonprofit organization that helps bands that are out on the road and stuff. And a couple years in a row, we were at Warped Tour, you know, passing out, you know, information about that to the bands. And I could definitely see like the demographic that, you know, whoever you name those bands. I mean, even on the record label we're on, Fit for a King is really big in that market with those like 18 to 25 year old folks. And yeah, to me, I'm just like, man, where are those kids at? Like, I need to, of course, if I went up, if I found them, they'd be like, who are you? You're with my dad.
Get away from us, Gramps.
Right. You're so old. And I'm like, I'm not old. Like, I feel like I'm 33, by the way. I don't feel like that's old. Is that old? Is 33 old in metal years, I guess, maybe?
In metal years, I think you're fine. But I mean, when I was 18 years old, I mean, if a 33 year old was coming around trying to sell me a CD, I'd be like, get out of here.
Right. What do you think? Who's 33? That's so old. But I keep thinking, man, like, so many of my favorite actors, musicians, you name it. Like, a lot of their careers didn't get going until they were in their 30s. And it's just so weird that to be 33 and to kind of be like walk into a show or concert now when we play and be the old guy in the room. Right. It's just such a weird thing. It's like sports or something. It's like I'm an athlete and, oh, he's in his 30s, so now he's out of his prime. And it's like, no. Anyway.
Oh, I mean, when I was 23, I thought I was old and washed up because by the time I was 23, I'd already toured the country a few times. And the band that I was in at the time broke up. And I was just like, man, if I get a band going now, nothing's really going to happen until I'm like 27. And then, you know, by 27, you're ancient. And now, you know, I'm 37. And I'm like, I could start a band right now. Who gives a shit? You know?
Right,
it's,
exactly.
It's crazy, though, how the world changes, you know, the older you get, I guess.
To tie that back into death therapy, I will say that it's a very interesting dynamic to be starting a new band in 2017. The music industry is totally different than it was. I had never heard of a podcast.
Right.
In 2002 or 1999 when we started Becoming the Archetype. What was a podcast? What was an iPod? I mean, I think I had one sometime in the early 2000s. I got my first one. I've still got it in my car, by the way, my original iPod with like 10 bajillion songs on it.
Nice.
And occasionally when we're like traveling to a show, I pull it out and one of the guys who plays drums with me is 22 years old. And so I'll just be like scrolling through all these old bands and playing songs. And I'm sure he's like mortified every time. But I'm like, dude, you check out this. And he's like, oh, what is this? Never heard this. But he gets back at me because then he'll plug in his iPhone and play stuff for me. And I'm like, who is this?
What's going on?
He's like, oh, you haven't heard of this? I'm like, no. He's like, oh, yeah, but this is Beartooth or whoever. And I'm like, who? Anyway.
So with this band live, it's just you and a drummer, correct? You and a drummer and yep. Programming. So,
which is awesome for travel because it's like, hey, let's get in the Suburban and go, you know, no trailer, no nothing. It's nice.
That type of stuff just scares me to death, you know, with the train wreck that could happen. Has anything gone awry on stage yet?
So there are train wrecks that can happen, but I'm also pretty old school in the fact that in Becoming the Archetype, if we couldn't literally reproduce it on stage without backing tracks or anything, we wouldn't do it. So when it came time to do an electronic sort of metal project, I knew there would be backing tracks probably. But I still kind of wanted to keep it to a minimum. So, you know, worst case, our tracks mess up. We just turn them off and we keep going. You know what I mean? It's not like we really have anything that we depend on to make us go. And we play a lot of small venues that don't even have good enough sound systems to really make the tracks, you know, happen the way we'd like them to. I mean, obviously that's a big part of our sound, but at the end of the day, the thing that drives our sound forward is the bass riffs, the vocals, and the groove, you know, between the bass and the drums. So, you know, the backing tracks are kind of, they fill out the sound, but yeah, so there could be a train wreck. I could see train wrecks, but we do it in a pretty simple way is what I'm trying to get at. There are some bands that go out there that, I mean, they've got a laptop and they're running four or five different tracks that are being, you know, one of them's being reamped over here through Axe FX and it's coming down a guitar cab. And this guy over here is running, not to get too technical, but I mean, actually there's a lot of bands doing that right now, by the way.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And I would never have even thought of that 10 years ago. I would have been like, why? You're cheating. You can't do that. You know, but then they're also running backing tracks over here that are coming through and going into interfaces that are splitting out into stereo. Like we more or less just send like a MIDI file to the house that plays and we hear it in our ears, our headphones, and we play along with it. You know, if it messes up or cuts off, then we're good. We'll just keep going.
Yeah, the amount of laptops on stages out there right now just blows me away. And I'm with you. I'm old school, you know, grew up loving Metallica and Megadeth and right. all that stuff. And, you know, I would have murdered them back in the day had I found out that Metallica was running tracks. It's just right. awful.
Oh, I've heard stories. I won't mention any band's names, but I've heard stories of bands, you know, big arena metal bands playing these shows, and their sound guys have told me stories about even back then, some of them were running tracks for the solos and other stuff. You know, they would just the fader, they'd bring down the guitar during the solo and bring up the track and then, you know,
oh wow,
put it back. And it's like, oh my gosh, really? That was, it's like, yeah, that's been happening. So to a certain extent, I kind of, with this project, I was kind of like, okay, look, you know, I don't want to be like a cheater, you know. I don't want the main thing that's happening in our music to be on the track. But if we can fill it out, I'm going to probably be the only one in the room who's offended by it nowadays. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
And if I'm the only guy in the room who's offended by it, then we're good, because I overthink everything. You're probably kind of like me. You're the guy that would go to the show and, like, you know, before you can enjoy the band, you're thinking about, like, oh, why are they using that? And why are they doing this? And, like, you know, I'm noticing all the little things. Oh, I saw the drummer look at the singer when he messed that part up.
Right.
And the people are like, did you not? Why didn't you just enjoy the show, man? And I'm like, oh, sorry. You know,
that was actually like early band stuff. Like, we had to get over really quick was, like, if we were playing a show and our guitar player, like, flubbed a note, we would all, like, all of us turn right. to him and be like, what, you know, give him like the look or whatever. And we had to get over that really quick. And, I don't know if we ever did, but yeah, that was,
you just have to learn to roll with it. Like, oh yeah, I meant to do that. Like, no big deal.
You'll do it twice. It's jazz.
So those are the Devin Townsend, when we get to record with him and Becoming the Architect, he called those dark harmonies.
Nice. Yeah, shit. It's one of those, like, once again, I'll just bring up, I'm going to basically just link Travis's podcast, like, every episode he's had with you in the show notes on this one, because it truly is, like, what haven't I heard about this guy that...
I love old video games. There's two tracks
on this
record.
Oh, that's right. Actually, that's
one thing. There's two tracks on this record that are, like, a tribute to classic video games, so...
I just got the NES Classic. It was funny, because you were talking about the last two tracks on the album are kind of... homages to Castlevania, and Castlevania 1 and 2 were on the NES Classic.
Oh yeah.
So prior to you talking to Trav about that, I had actually got the NES Classic and had been playing Castlevania for like 2 days before that, and then you come out and you're like talking about it. So the best YouTube comment there was Nintendo Core.
Nintendo Core. Now see, Nintendo Core means something totally different to me, because I feel like in the early 2000s there was kind of a resurgence of like nerd core, Nintendo Core, right. You know, but yeah, no, the last two tracks, and again, it wasn't something I did. Like I said, this record was not done very intentionally in a lot of ways. I know it sounds bad to some people, but like, I the more I thought about it, most of my musical influence actually comes from video games. Like, I know it sounds weird, but like, when you're a kid and you sit and you play video games like I did, like old adventure games on the NES, I was hearing that music more than I heard any music. You know what I mean? I was hearing the Zelda theme song and the Castlevania backing music and the Mega Man backing music as much as I heard anything on the radio or a CD or a tape or anything. I mean, that music was like the music of my childhood. Sonic the Hedgehog, the soundtracks to that, I mean, that's just metal music in 8-bit format. If you put, you know what I mean? If you put drums behind it, that's just epic metal music. So when I sat down and I wrote those last couple songs, it was like, yeah, let's just basically all it is let's just change the sample sounds we're using. Otherwise it's just, you know what I mean? Otherwise it's just, it's just another industrial metal song. But when you change it and you sort of use particular, so actually, even though the title of the songs is The Belmont Family Curse, which ties in with Castlevania was not the main one I was shooting for. There were certain sounds, like, if anyone's listening to this, there's certain sounds I was trying to pick out. So at the very beginning of the song, sort of shooting for like a Zelda, like old school Legend of Zelda sound. There's a couple sounds in there that I was trying to really shoot for, like a final old Final Fantasy kind of sound. There's a couple parts that are, there's like these little walk down kind of things that were supposed to be Castlevania. But the weird part is Castlevania has such an amazing soundtrack that a few of the comments people I've seen leave are like, they're like bummed that it's like, it doesn't live up to the hype. It's not as good as Castlevania. And I'm like, I wasn't trying to write a castle, you know, and I've actually had several messages, private messages from people who are like, are these cover songs of Castlevania like that you did? Or these are, I'm like, no, like it's not, I couldn't touch the Castlevania soundtrack if I tried, you know what I mean? But I just wanted to write something that says, hey, I love classic video games and their music is awesome. So Double Dragon, come on. Like those songs, I got those songs in my head. Ninja Gaiden, I mean, so good.
Dude, you need an NES Classic. All those games are on it. So
I'm sure that I have an original NES and I have those games. So I'm good. I just have to do more blowing into the cartridge, right. which consequently, if you look on the back of the cartridge, it tells you not to do
that. I know that's like the most, I've seen a meme or something where it's like the most, you know, disregarded instruction of all time. Actually, you know, kind of the other side of the video game music is, you know, early 2000s, mid 2000s, you know, you would have Tony Hawk Pro Skater with a great punk rock soundtrack, or even Madden for a long time would have like Avenged Sevenfold and crazy bands like that on there. And now, you know, you're really not getting that. And I, you know, the Avenue, well,
the Doom soundtrack for the newest Doom game.
Yeah.
Has got a ridiculous metal soundtrack, like original music written for the Doom side. They actually did a tour. So people should check that out. It was actually one of the inspirations for some of the things that we did on this record. We listened to what he did there with some of the really cool effects and down-tuned, you know, nastiness that he did. Cause it's just like a metal record basically put over a video game. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. The other side of that was, you know, there's a few bands on those, you know, those video games that you would play a video game so many times. And after a while you're like, you know what, maybe this song is actually good. You know?
Yeah. Like everybody heard Jerry Was a Race Car Driver by Primus on like the old Tony Hawk.
Right.
And those people never would have listened to Primus, but then all of a sudden they're like, it's pretty cool. What is this?
Right.
You know, or an old Blink 182 song, or something like that. So
that's one of the best, there's like a 90s nostalgia Facebook group and they always post, you know, old MTV clips of Jerry Was a Race Car Driver played live at MTV Spring Break and stuff. And
so awesome.
Just watching all that stuff. I just love all of it.
See, that's the dream. Les Claypool found the dream, you know, but it's like, it's hard to believe that a band like Primus went, you know, they had two albums in a row that went platinum.
Mm-hmm.
If they came out today, well, I mean, they'd be in the boat that I'm in.
Right.
You know? I'm just trying to get just hoping that we can sell 1,000 records this first week, because the record just came out. You know, if we could sell 1,000, I'll be jumping up and down doing cartwheels in the street. I'll be like, yes,
I quit my job.
1,000 people bought my band CD. I'm good. You know, but back in the 90s, I mean, Primus was huge. I mean, the weirder you were as a band, the better. So I'm hoping that maybe I can capitalize on a little weirdness, nostalgia.
It's kind of funny you brought up the what would happen if Primus came out today, because I was watching the video and I was like, what would happen if Primus came out today? Because, I mean, you know, you got Lair as kind of a metal guitar player, and Tim Alexander is kind of a metal drummer, but you got Les up there being Les, and, you know, would they be more of a more like sticky band like Tenacious D or something, or would they... Because, you know, Primus is a respected band to where,
right.
You know, not that Tenacious D is not respected, but they're looked at as a joke band, you know.
Right. I think Primus would be one of those sort of like band for musicians. And there's a lot of people that do that really successfully now. Like they appeal mainly to other musicians. And that's what Primus is now. But what I'm saying is, back in their heyday, I mean, they were a popular music band on MTV, like you said, playing Spring Break for 20,000 people, all moshing their brains out. And I miss that. I miss those times. That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping there's going to be sort of a resurgence of just simpler times. I feel like maybe, don't know what it was that was so different. Is I feel like back then it was just like the scene wasn't oversaturated, and people weren't nearly as like concerned about, oh, is this my style or not? Like we played a show the other day. Sorry, you can probably hear my daughter practicing her metal scream in the background. I told the crowd, I was like, guys, I just want to let you know, because I can tell some of you are concerned. Like, you're really worried. Like, if I enjoy this, am I going to lose some of my metal cred? Like, this is too industrial. Am I allowed to like this? And I'm like, guys, it's okay. Like, there was a simpler time when we all just, if it was heavy, we were headbanging and moshing. Like, we didn't care. But now there's people I feel like are listening. It's like, oh, what is it? Am I allowed to like it? I don't like industrial normally. Can I like this? And I'm like, yeah. Let's all just support each other in the scene. Like, is it metal? You know what I mean? Now we've got so many subgenres. I feel like people are just, I only like, you know, sludge, death, power, violence, you know? And I'm like, right. Oh my gosh, really?
Oh man. Yeah. It's too much. Another Primus thing was I saw them, it was like Ozfest 98, 99, something. There was like Ozfest. It was a Primus right into Slayer, and it made sense.
Yeah. You know, it's exactly. Like one of those things. That's what I'm saying.
Talking about a subgenre that I kind of watched from outside was the whole kind of Christian metal core, you know, Cornerstone, all that stuff. I was just really surprised how many Christian bands kind of came out of the woodwork, like, or how many people just came out professing that they were Christian metal bands. It kind of felt gimmicky after a while. I mean, was that something you saw too?
Yeah, no, I mean, I can remember doing that sort of thing and thinking it was kind of new. In the like late 90s, early 2000s. And I can also remember when I thought that metalcore was new. I can remember being like, oh, this is like, it's like metal, but it's kind of like got like a hardcore vibe. Oh man, it's going to be so new and so fresh.
We should call it metalcore.
Right. And now I'm just like, oh man, it's so cheesy and lame. And it's surprising how many of those bands have stayed the course and become really successful. I mean, the Devil Wears Prada is going out with Anthrax,
right?
And Killswitch Engage. And I can remember when the Devil Wears Prada, you know, was the new band at Cornerstone, because you mentioned Cornerstone. I remember when they were the new band, and we headlined one stage, and they played like the after hours show after the stage closed down kind of thing. It's like, who are these guys? And now they're opening for Anthrax. I'm like, wow. Other bands like that. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, it got really gimmicky. Very famously, Tim Lambesis came out and said all the stuff he said, like once he got arrested, about how, you know, he said 90% of those bands calling themselves Christian bands at all, they were just using it as a gimmick, basically to sell records to the sort of youth groupy church dynamic. And I don't think it's 90%, but I think it's more than 50%. I think it's really surprising if you found a band that, you know, started out as sort of warriors for the Christian metal cause, who 3 or 4 years into their career were still, you know, into that. It was more like we started when we were 18 and, you know, we grew up and our parents wouldn't let us listen to Slayer, so we listened to Mortification instead, or Tourniquet, you know, because that was the Christian alternative. You remember those? And like maybe you do, maybe you don't. But sadly, there was a time when you'd go to the Christian bookstore and there'd be a list of like, if you like Marilyn Manson, you should listen to, you know, Death Therapy.
Nice.
Yeah. I really miss that, because, you know, that could help me sell some records. I'm just kidding. No, I'm glad those days are past us. I'm glad that we sort of reached a place where I could be wrong, but I feel like now we've reached a place where sort of the shock factor of, oh, this is a metal band with people of faith in it, is kind of over, at least a little bit over. I mean, I can remember there used to be stuff where it was like, oh, a Christian death metal band, and then all the like purist death metal folks back in the days of like the HXC boards or the black, you know, all these other things, they'd get so mad. They'd be like, if it's Christian, it's not real metal, and blah, blah, blah. And like, I guess what I'm saying is those are two extremes. There's like the super corny side of like the way the Christian metal thing was. And then on the flip side, there's the people who are like super anti that. I think it's kind of cool now that, you know, it's music. We're supposed to sing about what's important to us, the change we want to see in the world. That's what we're supposed to do. If you're an Islamic band, you should sing about that. If you're a anarchist band, you should sing about that. If you're a Christian band, okay, you sing about that. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's, oh, yeah, that's kind of what it, that's kind of what it is, especially in indie and metal. So I'm really actually kind of happy that I hate looking back. It's almost like the awkward middle school years of the scene. Looking back at that, I'm glad that we've kind of gotten past that. And now it's just kind of like, okay, cool. I mean, you know, Dustin Kendrew from Thrice writes, you know, spiritual lyrics. Okay, well, can we all get past that and just realize that Thrice is a killer band? Like, I think that's great. And so I'm hoping that, you know, Death Therapy can kind of be in that category too. Like, I write about the stuff I believe. I write about stuff that is important to me. But I'm not trying to, like, you know, shove it down anybody's throat. And I'm not trying to, like, you know, go out and start a revival, you know, tent meeting or something at each show. Just trying to be true to what I do. So,
was that you talking about becoming the archetype, having trouble kind of getting out of the playing the, you know, Christian, the, you know, church basements because of the guarantees were better and, you know, accommodations were better? Was that you talking about that? That was,
it's possible that I talked about that. 'Cause I mean, there is definitely a time in the early 2000s where that dynamic I was just talking about, like, hey, here's the Christian alternative to such and such. And there were so many kids in youth groups and stuff that were into, like, the alternative rock scene in the late 90s, early 2000s, that there was almost like a subsidizing that the church can't, like, churches and youth groups came in and were like, hey, we'll give you a place to play and we'll pay for you, all this other kind of stuff. Sorry, somebody's knocking on the door. There was like a subsidizing of the scene that happened. And so there was a time when I think it was hard to break out of that for a lot of bands. And that's, I mean, Tim Lambesis is talking about that, you know, As I Lay Dying, Under Oath, you name the band. I mean, Norma Jean, whoever, like, where would they be in 2017 if not for what the church and sort of the Christian scene did for them in 2003? You know, right. What I mean? It's hard to quantify that and say, did it help them or hurt them? 'Cause you could say on the one hand, it helped them to get started quicker. But on the other hand, you could say some of them didn't ever break out. Becoming the Archetype, I'm not saying we didn't ever break out of that bubble, but to a certain extent, Becoming the Archetype was a big fish in a small pond. You know what I mean? Yeah. We were big in the sort of cornerstone world, Christian music, metal scene. But, you know, if we had gone and played, you know, Walk in Open Air or something, everybody would be like, who is this? We don't know who these people right. are. Becoming the Archetype, scrubs, who are these people? So
I think the conversation was along the lines of, you know, you would get 10 times the guarantee at a youth group function rather than, you know, being an opening band on a bill of three or four, you know, maybe a secular music kind of a tour.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were definitely times like that. I mean, whether I was the one talking about that or not, I'll back it up and say that was the case. Now, that's not the case anymore necessarily. There's very, very few places doing that anymore. So now it's a little bit, again, it's I think we got past some of those awkward years because some of that was really cool. But then you can look at some people who were involved in that, look like Andrew Schwab from Project 86 or Mark Solomon from The Crucified, and Stavesacre. They've written books and in their books talked about how they got so sick of that. They got so sick of, like, going and playing at a church. And yeah, the money might have been good, but then, like, right before their set, some guy would come up and try to preach, and, like, totally kill the, like, concert vibe, or, like, you know, they would see them smoking a cigarette outside the show and, like, you know, oh, you know, are you Christians, you know, kind of thing. I remember Jesse Smith from Zayo talking about that, you know, people would see him smoking at Cornerstone and be like, what? I can't believe you. You know, that kind of stuff. It's just, I'm so glad some of that's gone, or at least a lot of that's gone now, because Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there was the upside a little bit to the fact of like, oh, hey, we're a new band. We'd like to play a show. Oh, cool. Well, our church does shows and, you know, they'll pay because they believe it's a ministry kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, going to your local bar and be like, hey, we're a new band. And they're like, oh, you're going to draw anybody? Because if not, we're not.
go sell these tickets kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Go sell these tickets if you want to play. So.
So yeah, ma'am. The other thing I want to talk about a little bit is, are you still involved with the nonprofit,
RIFO?
Yeah, RIFO.
No, I don't work for RIFO anymore. Well, I mean, I am sort of like a volunteer affiliate status kind of person. Like I help out, occasionally, but no, I worked for them full time for a little while. And, it's something that I still really care about. Our band is part of their network.
So everything is still going on with that program?
Yeah. RIFO.org, RYFO.org. Bands can go sign up, get free places to stay all around the country, showers, food, all kinds. I mean, people open their homes up to you and take care of you, which was what we needed. We needed places to stay. We couldn't afford $100 a night on a tour. You know what I mean? That you start racking up thousands of dollars that you could be putting into, you know, back into your band, into your business. When you do that. So it's huge, really helped. They do lots of great stuff for bands. And it's not like a Christian only kind of organization. There's tons of secular bands that use it. It's just open to everybody. So
I like the idea of it just because it's, you know, you're always at the venue at the 12th hour, whatever that, what is it? The final hour, looking for a place to stay, asking around. And a lot of times you always end up at like some weird shady house and,
you know, some crack house with some guy named Fetus.
Right. Or, you know, like, yes. Well, we'll get to that. And then some girls like, oh, you can stay at my house, but, you have to sneak in through the basement and all this other stuff. Yeah. So yeah, you just get so much weird stuff, but, let's talk about Fetus.
Oh, no, we're not Fetus. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Wonderful, wonderful man.
Treated us to a wonderful, wonderful night stay at his creepy little house. Yeah. There were many houses that we stayed at before we knew about RIFO. Well, and even after, because sometimes there wasn't a place to stay. Many places we stayed at where it was like we would have to make up some sort of like, oh, man, we just realized load-in tomorrow is super early. We need to drive through the night. we were going to stay with you, but too bad. Sorry, we can't. And I mean, sometimes it would be like super shady, illegal stuff. Sometimes it'd just be the lady who has way, way, way too many cats, you know, she wants you to stay with. So, yeah.
I did a tour in roughly 2007 and we stayed at someone's house that had too many birds. And these birds just talked and chirped all through the night. And like by the next day, we all left just like angry at the world and about ready to strangle a bunch of birds.
Awesome.
So yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. Well, I hope we haven't been too all over the place.
I think we have, but this is, you know, this is what a podcast is about. I'll, edit it all together and I think we'll have a nice little podcast here, but just, we'll just kind of wrap it up with, you know, how can people find Death Therapy and maybe some of the, we kind of went over it earlier, but what are the plans for Death Therapy?
Yeah. So, the plans are to keep doing what we're doing, play as many shows as we can, get out on the road. Definitely a lot this summer, hopefully this fall. And even coming up, like I said, there's a tour that we're working on that would actually start in a few weeks. Take us around the West Coast and places like that we really want to get to. And that'd be a month long. So we're doing that. People can go online. And I'm pretty sure at this point, if you just search for Death Therapy, we have overtaken all of the references to the movie What About Bob, which is sort of where the band name came from. People over 30 might know about that. Trav, actually, I don't think he'd ever seen that movie. He texted me the other day and said that he watched it. It's on Netflix, What About Bob. It's an old Bill Murray movie.
Great movie. If you watch Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, if you know about it, if you watch it, then you'll know why I got the name from it. but yeah, YouTube, the whole album. You can stream lyric videos, like you mentioned to me when we started talking. You can watch the whole album. Stream on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, everywhere. But if you're the kind of person who is inclined to buy music, it'd be awesome. First week sales mean everything. And that's where we're at. It's first week. So
very cool. Jason, I definitely appreciate you taking the time. And what we'll do here is finish it out with a song by Death Therapy and just pick a song and give me a little bit of a story about it.
Oh, man, I have to pick a song.
Yeah.
Huh? Okay, well, I am going to pick the song is called The Lie.
Okay.
It is the third track on the record. And it is probably is one of the earliest songs I wrote on the record. Sitting down and just writing some bass licks, writing some riffs, came up with the main hook riff of this song. And so it's kind of a song that shaped the rest of what the band does. So as a person listens to this song, like if they didn't listen to any other track on the record, they could listen to this one and kind of get a picture of what other things we might do. It's a song that kind of embodies the whole record. It's dealing with personal struggles, personal feelings of inadequacy and wanting pain to go away and depression and other things, which is large themes on this record. So that's what it is.
All right, man. Well, once again, I appreciate it and have a good night.
Thanks, man.
Lost on my throne.
Alright, gotta say a huge thank you to Jason Wisdom for taking the time and coming on the podcast. That was almost an hour-long conversation, and I had not heard that since we recorded it, and it kind of sounded like two old friends. Good to hear him, man, and make sure you guys go and check out As the Story Grows with Trav Turner. Jason has been a guest on his show three times, and every time it's a great conversation. I think Jason and Travis have a relationship outside of the podcast. I believe they've done some music together, things like that. So, huge thank you to Jason Wisdom. And once again, make sure you're checking out The Calm Before the Storm, out now on Solid State Records. And now let's get into some final thoughts.
Final thoughts
one. It's going to be check out Bleed TV. Some great friends over there. You got Zach, Cash, and Jake over there at Bleed TV. Do a great podcast. They basically break down all the best shows on TV. And my favorite shows right now, The Outsiders and The Walking Dead, they do great shows for those two shows. They also deal with the Vikings, and they just started to do Into the Badlands. So if you're into some great shows and you want to hear breakdowns of those great shows, make sure you're checking out Bleed TV. And if you think you watch your shows and you think you watch it close enough to where you catch everything, I beg to differ. Because if you check those guys out, you will know that you're missing stuff, because I watch the shows all the time, and then I'll listen to those guys. I'm like, oh, I didn't even notice that, or I didn't notice they said that, or oh my God, I forgot that was a callback to four seasons ago, things like that. So they just do a great job over there. So make sure to check out Bleed TV and let them know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you over there. The next final thought of the week. It's going to be for our good friends over at Catatonic, and that's Cadatonic. If you guys are getting a sticker in the mail, if you're ordering a sticker, not necessarily ordering, but just saying you want one, and I send you out one. We got these through catatonic.com. They do great work over there, and if you guys need any kind of stickers made for your band, your podcast, or just, hey, let's make some crazy funny stickers and try to get them all over town, make sure to head up Catatonic. And they also do, if you have a drawing or if you want a 3D model made of yourself, an action figure, you can get a Talk To Me action figure if you just send them a picture of me with a microphone, and they'll send you back a Talk To Me action figure. No telling how much that costs, but the stickers they sent were great and a great price. So make sure to head up Catatonic. That's at Catatonic on Twitter or catatonic.com. And then the last and final thoughts of the day. Our good friend Scribble, you may know him from the classic metal show Rap, or you may know him from, he redid the Sweating Bullets theme for the classic metal show. Hopefully he'll get into some Talk To Me and do some stuff for Talk To Me. Scribble, you hear that? Let's do a Talk To Me theme too. His latest album is called Drug Spun Funk. He has reached out to the podcast. He heard about us through the Classic Metal Show. We've now heard about him through the Classic Metal Show. So it's like one huge happy family. And I want to leave you today with some Scribble. And we're going to go with Whole New Level. Not to New Level by Pantera, but Whole New Level by Scribble. It's off Drug Spun Funk. Make sure to check it out. It came out in 2016, but it's still fresh and ill and cray cray and all the other cool words that the kids are saying these days. But make sure to check out Scribble, Skribbal. It's not Skrillex like my phone wanted to say, but it's Scribble. So let's check out some Scribble off of Drug Spun Funk. This is Whole New Level. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys next week.
Yeah. Blowing like a winter breeze, homie, don't test me. Flex or you want, bitch, you do not impress me. I am not intimidated, I am a machine. Half devil, half bionic cybernetic being. Jumping off a spaceship, landing on your planet. Cause I came to do some damage and put rappers in a panic. God damn it, I'm the motherfucking man. So put my shit on repeat and let it fucking jam. Uzi never jam when I stick it in your face. I've been cooking up a recipe to serve you on a plate. Never underestimate the skill to desecrate. It is I, devil man, fuck with me, I'll set you straight. On the curb, bite it, tell me how it tastes. Tell these other motherfuckers they can get the same. I do not give a fuck about your money or your chain. I'm in the game to kill them all and devastate your name.
Never would've figured I could get so high. Standing here looking at the world go by. Oh my, 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 oh my
been looking for an answer. Got a million faggot rappers, so I'm cutting out the cans.